Good job. So I do appreciate you, Chris. I do appreciate everyone in that room. And I look forward to anything but the best, and whatever, you know, I could do or the council can do at our limited level, I'm definitely supportive.
Okay, and that will be supporting the resolution that comes next week. Mayor Johnson would like to speak. I'll catch you up soon, Margaret. Mayor?
Hey, good evening, everyone. Sorry, I'm a little bit disheveled. I'm actually cooking dinner right now. But I want to definitely throw my support in, you know, for our healthcare workers. I wanted to give an update that myself and State Senator Michelle Henty have put together a letter of support that's going to go to administration, and I would, you know, recommend that the council do the same as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Do you always cook with a hoodie? Margaret?
I just came from the gym.
Margaret?
Sure. I had a question for the CMH staff. So, you know, we are all aware that there is a significant nursing shortage right now, which is why you have these traveling nurses. Getting a raise, that's one thing, but what is the administration doing to recruit and address the actual shortage? Because your situation is not really going to improve very much unless there's adequate staffing. You're still going to have, even though you might get an extra 5 hours, that doesn't really change the whole scenario. So I don't know if in the letter that the council is going to send or that the mayor has sent, if the question of action plan from the hospital for recruitment has been addressed. So is that something any of you can speak to?
No, I wish I could.
I can speak to that. We are definitely looking at recruitment efforts. The administration is also looking at recruitment efforts, but I think that the focus right now needs to be retaining the folks that we have that are dedicated to our community. So we do want to encourage, you know, more people to work at the hospital, but we don't want to send them there when there's, you know, working conditions are awful and the pay is terrible.
May I address that for one moment? My name is Susan Hunt. I also work on the mental health
unit.
The hospital, and I've worked there for 28 and a half years, and I continue to work there. The hospital does recruit new nurses from the college. However, the nurses that do come in and are hired only stay there and get trained for about a year. And you can look this up. Then they go to the higher paying hospitals. CMH was always, many years ago, the highest paying hospital in the region. And I'm going back 20,
I'm going back to the 70s.
So they hired the new nurses and retained the new nurses. But now they can't. They're just not, and the fact that they don't respect us enough to allow us to sit down and have a meeting. We've gone to the Human Resources Building to speak with Kelly Sweeney, and we're told by the secretary that she's not there on numerous occasions. So she won't even come out and
thank you. Margaret, you'll see the proposed resolution later tonight. It just came in early. I mean, it wasn't in time to read for tonight, but we'll definitely be circulating tonight. Vicki, did you want to say something?
Yes. I visit the hospital on a regular basis, and I have to say that everything the healthcare worker said is absolutely correct. It's amazing what a great job they're doing, considering how understaffed they are. But a big issue they're having, from what I hear from the nurses, is that they cannot find anything to rent nearby. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are traveling from far away. There's no affordable and workforce availability for rental around here. So that we have to keep in mind. So the $5 increase is really nothing. It could be more, you know, it should be.
Thank you, Vicki. Linda, I want to point out that Art and Ronnie are now here. Okay, moving right along. Let's get to the department reports. And we'll begin with fire. I believe, let's see who's here on their behalf. Hutch, are you here?
FYI, Tom, I've been here since the beginning. I just switched over to my
Okay.
Just wanted to know.
Okay, oh,
Sam is running.
Yep. Okay, who wants to speak, Chief DeMarco or Commissioner Hutchins?
I'll defer to the chief.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Hutch. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes. I just got a few things tonight. I'll start with our calls for the month. The month of March was kind of a slow month. We had 25 calls. However, year to date, we're at 141. On June 4th, from 11 to 1, we're going to have the wet down for the new power ladder. And the ceremony is going to be at 12:30, and the council's all invited for that. We're expecting within the next month or so the Fort Security grant to come up again, probably in the next couple of weeks, and we'd like to look into that again. Unfortunately, usually we know this is a pretty quick one, the 2 month turnaround, so as we get more information on that, we'll forward it along to you. Other than that, I don't have anything. Hutch, you got anything else?
Hutch? Doesn't seem like it. Any questions for Chief DeMarco from the council?
Hello?
Oh, there's Hutch. Did you have anything?
Okay, sorry about that. I muted my phone by mistake.
Oh.
I just wanted to give a shout out to Assistant Chief Piro for the work he's done over the past couple of years for obtaining well over $200,000 in funding for the department through different resources. We've been able to replace all of our portable radios. If you've noticed some construction going on at Poisier Hose, we've added a new generator, new interior doors, as well as some other work on the station. Also with Chief Hoffman, contributing hundreds of hours of labor and completing a lot of the work that's been done at Voyager. Just wanted to just point those two guys out.
Thank you, Commissioner Hutchins. Any questions from council members? Okay, short and sweet. That's how we like them. Liz York, you're up next with the Youth Department report. Michael, Shaheen can do it, I think. Right, Shaheen? Put the screen up. You have the youth report?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Anytime you want to start. There we go.
House, and we went on a hike in the ground, and we did some crafts, and that was really nice.
Oakdale updates. We've been doing a lot of maintenance and beautification over at Oakdale. I don't think I sent a live link, so I don't know if Shane could pull that up. I don't think it is actually going to work. But we work with DPW and we dug out a lot of the phragmites that were at the lake, and that's, for those of you that don't know, an invasive species that were left alone, it would just take over the entire lake. So we got a permit from DEC. DPW was nice enough to work with us and get it out because we're in rocks, it would have taken us years to dig it up.
It's the first time in what, almost 10 years since it's been remediated. Yeah. You did a great job.
It was really cool. And if you get a chance to go to our YouTube channel and watch the time lapse video of it being dug out, that's actually really cool too. And I think this is on the city website if you want to cut and paste it. But that's not the only thing we did. We'll have to go back and maintain that. Once isn't going to do enough. There were some spots where they couldn't reach from the machine, so we'll have to go in and try and remove those at our Oakdale maintenance and rewilding events that we're going to talk about in a minute. And we got some insight from some different resources on how to manage those. We've also been doing a lot of work on just kind of beautifying. You'll see a lot of bulbs have come up, a lot of flowers at the entrance, which is really nice. I'm trying to pull in just a little bit every day. We also had some more work with DPW. All of our garbage cans we talked about last week, or last meeting, were redone so that they matched the garbage cans throughout the rest of the city of Hudson. And we had two more permanent ones put in. So there's one at the trailhead by the skate park, and there's also one at the entrance up to the playground. So no more loose cans to blow around. We're still collecting them a little bit, but we should be just permanent, nice-looking garbage cans so the garbage doesn't go everywhere. And then the other thing we did recently is the bleachers by the water along the road. Those boards were rotten and kind of gross, and we replaced all of those, and it looks really nice, and it's a really beautiful place to sit and look out at the newly opened lake. So if you've got some time on your lunch break and want to have a nice meditation. And then there's more pictures. Other Oakdale updates. So I just want to remind everyone, as we get back on the trails, to just be mindful that Oakdale is a natural resource. It is one of the few areas that we can go to in the city where we can be in the forest, we can be by the lake, we can see wildlife. And we need to respect the wildlife that's there. We had a lot of deer die this last fall because of that virus that was going around. I saw a family of deer there again, and so I'm hoping that we can be, you know, mindful. We're on the trails, we stay on the trails. If we have dogs, we keep them leashed. I know it's hard. Your dog is the best dog. It's never going to run away. It's never going to chase the animal. And we need to have a leash. So we also can't have them on a leash in the basketball area or in the skate park area because they need to be leashed at the park, and it's unsanitary for those dogs to be in there where children play, where people are sitting and playing. And so if you want your dog on a leash, there is a dog park at 2nd and Dock Street where you can go and unleash your dog. If you want your dog in the park, please have a leash. Also, please pick up your dog waste. That's another part of keeping it healthy and safe. Not only for humans, but for the nature in the park as well. And then there's a picture of a little turtle nest where the eggs have hatched. So those actually got laid last year, and then they hatched this spring and came out. So keep an eye out. And if after all this information about Oakdale, you're feeling really passionate about supporting this, well, you're in luck, because we have a rewilding event coming up on the 23rd, this Saturday. We're working with Friends of Oakdale Lake. We're continuing projects we began in the fall, removing invasive species and reintroducing native species to keep the forest healthy and thriving. We have based our projects on the information that was shared with us by Miguel Berrios through the Hudson Urban Forest and Management Plan. And he'll be sharing that at a public meeting this Wednesday. I think it's at 6 o'clock, and also on the city website if you want to get some more information on his research and what we can do. And at that event, we'll be having programs in child care. The Hudson Area Library will be there running an event, and we'll also have some staff there to help. A lot of our volunteers have children, and if you've ever tried to cut down a tree with a child running around, it's not very easy or safe, so we'll have child care and we'll have options. So if you're a parent and you're concerned about that, we will have someone to hang out with your kids and do a little program with them. Mine is not short and sweet.
That's all right. But it's got a lot of pictures.
Yeah. Well, I also have some new signs that I'm going to go up and go through. I've been talking about these for a long time. But they finally came in, and it's really exciting. We've got the rules that have, you know, all the expectations, no swimming without a lifeguard, children being accompanied, dogs on leashes, no smoking, following all the rules so not just be leave, and just basically being respectful and safe with everybody in the park. And this is done was done with Friends of Oakdale Lake, and they work for collaboratively with Friends of Hudson Youth and Tobacco Free Action of Columbia and Green Counties, and were designed by a local graphic artist, Morgan Marshall, and so those will be going up soon. Actually, I have a meeting to walk through this week to figure out where they're going to go. With the rules being posted, I just want to say there's not someone there to police all the time, which no one really wants someone to police their park, so if you guys can be respectful, everybody in the community, of following these rules, help each other remember them if you need to, and then always feel free to reach out if you have any questions or concerns. And there's pictures, so there are pictures of signs. Other news, we started registration for summer camp. We're really excited to offer summer camp again at Oakdale. It's going to be 6 weeks. Camp starting July 5th, going to August 12th, and it's 9 to 3 every day for children ages 5 to 13. We're doing all of our registration online, so you can find our registration on our Instagram page or our Facebook page. It's also been posted on the city website, so you can find it there. We have a youth department page there that has the link. And if you're having trouble, you can always reach out to us, 518-828-0017 or info@cityofhudsonyouth.org. With our summer camp, we are looking to hire our lifeguard team to get it open. I know we've been wanting to do some more hours, but if we don't have the lifeguards hired to work the hours we want it open, then it's not going to happen. So if you know anybody who has a lifeguard certification or who is interested in recerting, you can also help with recertification. We're specifically looking for a progressive swim instructor or a water safety instructor so that we can try to bring back swim lessons and let our kids swim in the deep end, because without one of those, it's all waist level swimming for the summer. No picture from this one. And then just a few more things, a couple more things. We're still looking for a recreation program coordinator if you know anyone who's interested. We've asked the local service to allow us to search outside the county at this point, and we're waiting to hear back. We have a meeting tomorrow to let us know. Nobody in the county has applied yet. But that doesn't mean you can't, so if you live in the county and you want to work with us, the position helps you create and schedule programming for our after-school and summer programs, as well as extra community activities and field trips. They also help to run and organize our recreational sports programs. It's a really solid foundation for this position that was left by the person who stepped out of it. A lot of contact already there, a lot of the structure is already there, so there's a lot of support and a lot of freedom to help shape it in the way someone wants to. And so if you like playing games and hiking and doing crafts and connecting with youth and community in a really meaningful way, this would be a great job for you. So if you know anyone, you can have them reach out, director@cityofhudsonyouth.org, or again the same phone number. And then just the last thing for school, which is a resolution on the table for this meeting. It is to add to the fee schedule. We've been approached about someone renting out our kitchen to do catering service because it meets all those expectations. It's, you know, inspected by the Department of Health. We currently don't have a rate of rental for that, just free to the building. So based on research of other venues and what they charge, we've proposed $100 a day, and hopefully that'll pass so that we can not only support that community chef, but also make a little money for the city and give back a little bit.
Thank you, Liz. Any questions from council members? Hold on. Let's see. We have Vicki. Do you have a?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to comment what a great job PPW did cleaning up Oakdale and the bleachers. They look fantastic. I went down and I saw them. I'm a little bit concerned about the whole thing about the doggy, the cleaning up after your dog, these dog plastic bags. It can take up to 10,000 years to disintegrate plastic, and I really would like to see us exploring compost, pet waste compost, and other more sustainable waste to take care of, you know, the dog waste. So that might be something eventually, I think, we should look into it. It might be also good for the kids to learn about composting. And I also had a question. Where are we supposed to know about a nutritionist? What happened with that? Maybe I missed it.
It's not a nutritionist. It's a food and nutrition coordinator. We offered the job to someone corresponding with the last meeting, and they accepted it, and so they have started. I'm going to email you guys. Everybody in council, I'm going to email you and connect you with them so that they can just directly speak for themselves to what they bring to the table and what they're excited about. And so I'll do that tomorrow when I get in the office, and you guys can ask them.
Are they full time?
They are, yes. They've been doing a great job. The kids are so excited. They're doing snack time. They're doing meals. They've also reached out to a lot of local farms to try and connect with, to see if they can visit farms. Maybe there's food that is accessible to our community. They've also reached out to some, like the Sylvia Center and some other organizations about combined programming. And the thing that they started that I'm the most, not the most excited about, but I'm pretty excited about it, is they've worked with New York State to apply for the reimbursement grant that they do for organizations that provide food to after school students. And that would be, the state would then reimburse us for the meals that we're giving, and that would go back into the general fund to cover the initial
Great.
Funds that come to us. So they're really great, and I will let them, I'll introduce them to you guys, and you can ask them.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Vicki. Art? Councilmember Frick?
Yeah, I was just curious to know if we needed and or already had any special insurance to rent out the kitchen.
I think it's because we are a certified kitchen. We don't need anything extra. They sign our waiver, which everybody who rents the building has to sign anyway. And I think that covers us from liability, and the fact that we're a certified kitchen covers the rest.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you. It was a great job as always.
Hold on. Ronnie, you're next.
So I was just wanted to follow up on Vicki's question. I know there are doggy waste bags that are biodegradable, so I'm not sure if we're already using that, but that could be a very simple.
Yeah, even if I have offer of that, but I think that I looked that up, and even if you get the biodegradable, there's some other issues. The best, more sustainable way, there's also recycled plastic, which in a way helps as well. There's a lot of various ways, but composting, I guess, it is not that hard at all to do, actually. But maybe the dog park should do it, and maybe that would be a great topic for the parks department. But I think we should address it, you know. Thank you,
Vicki. Ryan?
If you don't hear back from the person repairing the dock by the next week, let me know, and I'll go out and push that, because I know you want that in the water by Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions or comments? So moving on, thank you, Liz, as always.
Can you talk about the
moving.
Shop? Or,
what? Oh.
Lose their minds about the fact that they get to build and then have their own bike. And Aaron is on the support of other mechanics that will not be as available this year. So if you know anyone who's a bike mechanic and who wants to maybe join that program and help support, we are offer that program at camp every day.
It's every day at the camp.
Every day at camp, and then Tuesdays.
And then Tuesdays and Thursdays after that until the end of the nice weather, basically. And those are open.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Nia, are you here? Nia? Yes, you are. Nia
McKay. Hey, I'm here. Hello.
Okay, would you like to give your report on the senior center?
Yeah, we have a lot of really interesting things happening if that turned any of them tuned into our City of Hudson Senior Center Facebook page, they are posting them there. But I can give you a quick rundown. We have called the Alexander Technique, which started today. It's like a balancing yoga instructor class, and we've got great reviews of that. That happens on Mondays. First one today, the next one's going to be on the 18th and the 25th. Those are new to about 1:15. Main instructor named Becky Saylor. We've got some really great reviews and feedback already today. And then we have yoga for our seniors, for our certified teacher, OZOT. That's happening on Thursdays at 4:45 p.m. starting on the 14th of April. And we have a Hudson Senior Nature Walk going to be happening at the Greenfork Conservation Area with Sarah. She's the founder of Whale of a Trail. When that happens, just give us a call at our Senior Center and register for that. And that's going to be Saturday the 7th. And then the last thing I have so far to report is we have Afro Aerobics with Dr. Cynthia Stevens starting on June 4th, going from like 10:30 to 11:45. So we have a lot of great things in the final. Plus, there's the karaoke room starting to happen. We have the game room that's open every day now from like 2:30 to 4:30 for folks to drop in and play games. We have Meals on Wheels of volunteers happening now. So we're on to a good run. We started getting some good feedback. If anyone has any questions, want to reserve for a class, I can give you my number. I'll post it here. 518-828-3200 to get any more information or reserve a spot for a class and get more updates.
Thank you. Any questions from council members? I don't see any hands. Okay, thank you, Nia.
Thank you.
Heather, are you with us?
I am.
There you go. Do you need to share a screen?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Talking about this for quite some time, but you probably saw on your agenda that there is actually a proposed city accrual policy that you'll be voting on. I'm sorry, it says this week. You will not. You'll be voting on it next week. But it is on the agenda for your consideration this week.
Yes,
Elaine. Three resolutions that I was actively involved in. The first two are related. You're going to see one that's a loan from the general fund for the capital fund for the CSO stormwater separation project. That is the, we commonly call it the Front Street project, shorthand. That is a continuing project. I think Rob and I'm sure he'll fill you in later this evening, has been working on for like 8 years in various sections. But it's about separating the sewer water from the stormwater and the runoff. This is going to be a big phase project because we have a CDB grant of $750,000 and two WQIP grants for a grand total of somewhat over $1 million. But those, as most things are reimbursable, so we need to provide some short-term and then some medium-term cash flow. So the first one is the loan. That's for the short-term because the project has basically started and we need to be able to obviously pay our invoices. The second thing you're going to see tonight is a bond resolution, which authorizes the issues of either bans or bonds for that project, at which point the loan from general would be repaid, and then we would use that funding for the project through the period of time until the project is completed, once we get some grant reimbursements back, and then we know what the city's actual nut is that we have to cover long-term, and we convert that to a bond. And then the last one is just, it is has to be literally the last transfer resolution just to cover personal services for 2021 in one account because it was under budgeted. In terms of financial reporting, I know there's many, many new people on the council this year, so there is a thing that's currently called the annual uptake document. It is a document that comes out to be about an inch and a half thick or so, and it's required reporting to New York State, and it's done annually every year, and it's due by May 1st. Be happy to review the final product with you if you're so interested. But basically what it does is, among other things, it includes both income statements and balance sheets for 18 of the city's funds. And I know 95% of the time when you guys are talking about funds, you're talking about one fund, you're talking about the general fund. But there are actually four different operational funds. We've got 11 different capital funds that roll up into a consolidated capital fund. We have fixed assets, we have perpetual care, which is basically the money that we collect when somebody buys a cemetery plot that is required by law to be set aside in an account for perpetuity. The concept was back in the day that the interest that would roll off of that account would fund the maintenance of the cemetery. That has not been the case in, I don't know, probably 30 years or so. It clearly does not generate nearly enough income to cover the costs of cemetery, which is why if you look at the budget every year, the city pays approximately $300,000 each year into the cemetery fund as a one-way transfer because the cemetery fund, although it should be self-financing, is not. Then there's also long-term debt and there's some other things. It also has income statements, which is basically a P&L, for those of you who are familiar with that phrase. Pretty much just revenue and expenditures, and that's important because it shows you whether or not the city is netting positive or netting negative. I'm not going to use profitable or loss because the city, by definition, is supposed to have a balanced budget. So what that does is impacts things like your assets, your liabilities, and your fund balance. Balance sheets basically shows you what the city's overall assets are, which are the things that they have that are of value that can be anywhere from property to accounts receivable to obviously cash in the bank. On the flip side, you've got liabilities that offset that. Those are things like accounts payable and money that we owe to the school or the county because we're taxing, we're collecting their taxes on their behalf. Things that we owe in terms of the retirement plan and overall state retirement system liabilities. A lot of stuff, obviously. But basically, it's sort of a snapshot of the overall fiscal health of the city at that point in time, as opposed to the income statement, which is basically how did the city do in a 12-month period. This has been tricky this year for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is that the GASB, which is the Government Accounting Standards Bureau, in their infinite wisdom, created a whole new ruling which required basically the dissolution of one of our existing funds, which is a trust fund, which means that trust fund has to be basically separated into a lot of different moving parts and moved into different places and other funds where they had now determined it should live. We are still actually trying to get a final okay from the auditors on the 2020 adjustments. Once we do that, we will have a final adjusted 2020, and then we're going to have to make all those adjustments again for 2021. And that all has to be done before we can complete the AUD, which has to be submitted by May 1st. So it's a tight timeline, and much more stressful than it should be. But the good news is that based on the preliminary look of some of the GASB 84 restatements, I think it might have a positive impact on unallocated fund balance, and that's always a good thing. And then if that wasn't fun enough, once that's completed, then we start the 2021 audit on those actual financial statements that we just completed. So that's where we are in financial reporting right now. Upcoming financing. And we talked a little bit about this with the CSO project. But for those of you that are new, we issued a ban, which is a bond anticipation note, in June 2021 of a little over $3 million, which provided temporary funding for four capital projects, the replacement of water main on Washington Street, pump stations, which is a sewer project, the purchase of the ladder truck that the fire guys talked about earlier this evening, and then the Promenade Park portion of the DRI project. The thing about a ban is bans only last a year. And then at the end of that year, you either have to decide to renew them or you have to convert them into bonds. And so that becomes a timing issue. So we do have two out of those four projects that are complete. We do have the ladder truck, so that's done. The pump stations project is done, and we received the reimbursement of the grant component of that, which means we now know how much of that overall project, i.e. the city share, needs to be financed in the long term. So we're meeting later this week with our financial advisor. There's the opportunity to potentially move those two projects and convert them to a bond, which is a long-term financing strategy. But there are a number of components you have to take into consideration, whether or not the offer is big enough. I mean, it would be basically like $1.3 million. That may not be big enough to generate a lot of interest. It might be better to hold off until we have some other the other projects that are coming up to roll into that. It's more expensive to issue a bond, so you also have to look at the overall cost of the bond issuance cost and see if it makes sense to spread it over that amount of borrowing. And then obviously the counter to that is, what are interest rates going to do, and it's better to get in now with a smaller offer if we anticipate rates are going to increase over the year, which I think we all know that they will. But so that's all going to have to be figured out before basically the beginning of June. To add to that, of those four projects, we have two that are not complete and will be continuing for a while. So Washington Street Main replacement and Promenade Park will continue. So those will definitely be rolled over into a renewal of a ban. And then that CSO stormwater one, assuming that the council approves that bond resolution, will also be rolled into that. And we have three other capital projects. And I will say this is highly unusual that we have this many all at the same time, which obviously makes a lot of additional moving parts and makes it a little more complicated. But the Hudson Connects portion of the DRI is also coming up, and that's, you know, the whole streetscape thing down in the DRI district. The Ferry Street Bridge, which I'm sure all of you are aware of, which is a project that has been on the docket for, I think, 4 years at this point, and we are now coming close to the point where we're going to need some significant funds. And then the NYPA LED streetlights, which the council approved a loan from the general fund to the capital fund for the initial planning project. Once that planning project is done and the city decides if it's a go, there could be a significant multi-million-dollar borrowing behind that one as well. So that's where we are on sort of the financing portion of life right now. Because of the issues that I mentioned before, particularly with having to restate 2020 and now 2021, it's been much harder to try and get an early gauge on how 2021 might end up. Usually at this point, I have a better idea. But I do feel like, in general, we're going to see a nice bump in unassigned fund balance. And my rationale for that is, number one, currently, not sure that all the chargebacks are in yet, but most of them are. But currently, revenues versus expenditures for 2021 was a net plus of 220. In other words, we took in 220,000 more in revenues than we did in expenditures. So that drops to the bottom line. In a weird and unusual situation that won't repeat itself for very long, we were able to not use any fund balance to balance the 2022 budget. Usually we're taking out anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000, because generally our revenues don't exceed our expenditures. At least they haven't in the last 4 to 5 years. But we were able to use some of that ARPA money that came in to help offset the 2022 budget instead. So that's less fund balance that is allocated instead of unallocated. We also had fewer expenditures encumbered to 2022 than we did to 2021, roughly 300,000 less. But as I said before, until we complete all of those 2021 internal adjusting journal entries, we won't have the final number, but I do anticipate fund balance will be north of $3 million at the end of 2021. And that's what I've got.
Well, thank you, Heather. I know your job is to be conservative and not excited, but that's actually a very exciting and positive report. Oh, Margaret, you have a question?
Yeah, so Heather, you had indicated the reporting that you're doing to the state, the annual reporting, that if anyone was interested, that you would be able to walk us through that or show that. Do you think it would be useful, I don't know whether council members would be interested in having Heather do maybe a two-hour seminar with us and walk us through that reporting? I would really like to have a good understanding of the detail in that report.
Well, I think it would be great because we never got to do the recent momentum to have a just a general budget walkthrough as well.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And
that, now, yeah. It's due on May 1st. We don't need to... Do you want this before she submits it? Or
Well, Heather, it sounds like you've got an awful lot going on.
You're definitely not getting it before May 1st. I can tell you that right now.
Okay.
Shortly after that would be fine. And if we set up enough time, that would also be a great time. I think I heard this in the background, but we've been talking to several of you about sort of reviewing the budget overall. So, I would be more than happy to spend that time. I think, for me, the ideal thing would be anybody who's on a council or even council tangentially related that's interested in to try and create sort of one work session, presentation session.
And the purpose is for our education, so it's not to review what you're submitting to the state. So obviously, yes, it's going to happen
right.
If you met your deadlines. I also had another question unrelated to that, if I may.
Go ahead.
So, Heather, this is about the accrual policy, which I think you were involved with.
Margaret, can I hold you up? Elena, the attorney, is going to come and speak about that. Would it be better to ask her, or do you want to ask
her? Well, I have a very specific
question. Okay, go ahead.
In the report, in the audit, one of the things that was flagged and highlighted was, obviously there needed to be policies in place, but one of the things that was flagged was people accruing comp time over their lunch break. And there was one individual that when they did the audit, they did, I guess 20 random people, but one individual was earning comp time 56 times over lunch. And I didn't see anything in the policy that really talks about appropriate comp time. So it might be that you work actually late in the evening or something like that. But I think typically lunchtime is not considered an appropriate accrual of comp time. And I just wondered, and I guess Elena can talk about that.
Definitely.
But that's it.
I can address that as well if you want. The issue is that legally you are not allowed to work through your entire lunch. And I think that's something that very few people in the city knew about.
Right.
So once that was identified, you cannot earn an entire hour of accrual for your lunchtime. You can earn up to a half an hour.
Right. But that's actually exactly where I was coming from, because state law does not permit that. And it's not spelled out in the policy. So I just think it would be better and clearer if it was actually stated in the policy.
Yep, don't disagree. Yeah. But I think to Tom's point, that's an excellent point to bring up with Elena.
Okay.
Any other questions for Heather? Well, thank you, Heather. Oh, sorry, Vicki.
Yes. So, Heather, about this stormwater project, can you explain to me? So, we're having two grants, the $750 and the million a month funding. And it's been going on for 8 years, you said?
It has the project of trying to. So the city's under a consent order to do stormwater separation and has been long before any of us have been involved in this. Um, So the project, and Rob Carey will be a better better resource on this, but basically the project has been extant for a very long period of time, and sections of it keep getting done over time. So it's not that this particular part of the overall project has been around for 8 years. There have been other sections that have been done in prior years, so this is the next step, and we were waiting until we had adequate enough grants to make it basically affordable.
So what is the projected cost for this?
Oh,
because I'm trying to find to see if I don't know, yes.
I don't, honestly, unfortunately, I'm not on my work computer because I can't actually participate on Zoom, so I'm at home on my home computer.
Well, maybe you can send it to me, because I just have curious how, you know, these are big amounts we're talking about, so I'd like to know a little bit more about it. And
I think the city share ends up being around $300,000 out of a, you know, $2.9 million project. And again, that's a sum that would be rolled into a long-term financing.
Okay. And something very quick, I don't want to take too much time. You can you explain to me again about the cemetery? Something you said something about it in past.
Yes. So the cemetery is its own fund. We have four major operating funds. As I said earlier on, we actually have 18 different funds. But in terms of sort of operating, we have the water fund, the sewer fund, the cemetery fund, and the general fund. Almost everything that you and the citizens think about is the general fund. That's where all the operations are, common council, treasurer, city, police, DPW, all of those things. The water fund is specifically just for water. So all the expenses in terms of running the water plant are captured in that fund, and the revenues that the city takes in through its water and sewer billing, the portion of that that's appropriated for water, is that revenue. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a self-funding fund. So their revenues cover their expenses. They either make money or they don't make money. They're not making enough money. We have to raise rent, you know, water rent. Same thing with the sewer fund. We have all the sewer expenses, the sewer plant. Then the portion of the water sewer bill that is for sewer is their main source of revenue. Each of those currently has other sources of revenue as well. Sewer in particular has leachate processing, which has been basically people are bringing their, other companies are bringing their waste to get processed. And that is also their revenues and cover their expenses, and if not, we figure out how to make it work. Cemetery is supposed to be that way. Mm-hmm. So cemetery has revenues coming in from obviously selling grave sites and cremation sites and digging up foundations and all of that stuff. But they obviously have a lot of expenses, which is all the labor to do that work, the ongoing maintenance. You know, it's basically a giant park in some ways, so you've got a huge amount of labor in the summer. At some point, this is literally, I don't know how long ago, but I'm going to say 100 plus years ago, New York State enacted a law or a series of laws that basically said, when you sell a cemetery plot, you're going to get your money for your cemetery plot, but you're also going to sign a deed. You literally sign a deed for that property. You're also going to sign a second thing, which is a certificate of perpetual care. And you're going to pay X amount of money in that. And the reason why you're doing that is because we, the city, are going to take that money, we're going to set it aside so we're safe, we're going to try and earn interest on it, and the interest that we earn off of that money be used to maintain the cemetery.
I see.
Okay. So the problem is, though, in the last 50 plus years, the amount of money that we collect for perpetual care, and therefore the amount of money that's sitting in that bank account that the principal of which cannot be touched, the interest that it is spinning off comes nowhere close to covering the operational costs for the cemetery. So as a result, the general fund basically does a... There really aren't supposed to ever be one-way transfers between funds because they're all supposed to be self-sufficient. But it's just impossible with the cemetery fund. So basically, part of the budget every year. When you look at it, you're going to see an inter-fund transfer out to cemetery of anywhere from $250,000 to $350,000, which is basically the amount of money that the cemetery needs in order to fulfill its basic operations that it cannot cover with its own revenue.
I see. So cemeteries are private businesses.
That is correct.
For municipalities, they sure are.
And previous.
Thank you so much, sir.
Welcome.
Give that information.
And previous council members have tried to solve it with very little success. Who's that?
Dominic.
Yeah, go ahead, Dominic.
Just a quick question. Heather, so who established the rate for perpetual care? And is there a scale or every X amount of years? Because of the nature of, you know, things going up, does that rate go up?
That's a great question. I know that the actual rates for cemetery plots and things like that are determined ultimately by the Commissioner of Public Works, who oversees the DPW superintendent, who, per the charter, is now in charge of cemeteries. Earlier on, 100 years ago, they had a separate supervisor there for that. I actually do not know whether the perpetual care rates are determined by the state or by the city, but that's a really interesting question, and I'm going to look into it.
I know that in the past there have been efforts to raise the rates, and that's met a lot of resistance. So I think we do have some say in it, but we'll check into it. Okay. Thank you, Heather. Next up, by the way, there's some people here, I think, who are interested in the shared streets proposal that doesn't exist. I think I made it clear, you came late, and I made it clear at the beginning that's not on the table tonight. There is no proposal. It may come up again at the next tourism and event committee, but it has very little support from City Hall. So if that's why you're here, I don't want you to hang around for nothing. Where were we? Oh, next up is, I'm very pleased that you want to stay around. It's wonderful to have everybody here. But but thanks for coming, and feel free to attend again next week. Aww.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dominic, yes?
Yeah, can I just ask, since you mentioned shared streets, just a clarification. So my understanding is that, however this moves forward, it's the mayor's power to shut the streets out, correct? We don't have that. We don't have power to shut the streets out, correct?
Well, in theory, it would work like this. The common council would make a resolution. The mayor would have the option to sign it or not. If he said no, we could theoretically override his veto. That's how it works. So, but, you know, it's not even worth thinking about at this point. I mean, that's just standard procedure.
Right, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, I mean, right, okay, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, okay, yeah, because I mean, if the mayor has no interest or, you know, he doesn't want to do this, I mean, I don't see how, you know, unless something overwhelming that we should...
Right.
Kind of push the issue.
Oh, believe me, we're not pushing it. We're not pushing it.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Dominic.
And I'll reiterate.
Oh, he's still here.
Does have zero interest in selling the streets down.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Be interested in this.
Okay, so there's a number of votes against it already. Up next is our chief of police, Edward Moore. Thank you, sir.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Happy spring on this nice spring day.
Yeah, well, we're indoors. We're stuck indoors.
What, did you lose my whole audience at City Hall?
Yeah, actually, you did. Sorry, you have a reputation.
I'm blaming that, Heather. Here we go. So, mandatory reporting, okay? Right off the bat, the body worn camera report that we have a minimum of 125 incidents per month reviewed body camera footage went over to the mayor's office and was done without any unusual incidents to report. The mandatory reporting on use of force shows that for the month of March, there was one incident of use of force, zero instances of mandatory intervention by police officers, 45 arrests with 76 total charges, which is probably a little under average, and 10 instances of emotionally disturbed people calls, which is about average, and very happy to report that there was no instances of drug overdose or suspected overdose or use of Narcan, which is good because the city's trending actually better than the county overall for overdoses so far this short year. The report is included for all the alders to review. No real spikes in any particular crime other than disorderly conduct, and I think that's probably correlated to the better weather. So as the weather gets warmer, we tend to see more of these public disorderly kind of incidences. But the types of arrests and crimes committed and stuff are spread across the board without any particular spikes in one activity. It's also a quarter, Tom. Mr. President, this is a quarterly report, as you might recall, where we report on the ethnicity of traffic violations and enforcement.
Yes.
Again, the premise here is to use traffic enforcement as a barometer to see if there's any unfair policing going on to a particular demographic. We see that the tickets written to citizens in Hudson breaks right along the demographics of our city with no particular group targeted or not, I shouldn't say targeted, but spiking above another one. So that that report and what kind of tickets were written are sent also to all the council people. And with, again, no particular spikes in one particular area, the majority of the tickets, the high point was out on Fairview Avenue, but that'll be submitted for your review also. And while we're speaking of traffic enforcement, of course, with the weather getting better, some of our grant money kicks in for traffic enforcement. There's been a lot of talk about increasing enforcement of moving violations. So in the month of March, we see that we did three separate four-hour segments of what we call PTS enforcement, four-hour blocks, where we use grant money to target moving violations. So we did that on the 10th, the 23rd, and the 29th, and we targeted things like seatbelts, cell phone tickets, moving violations, and 20 tickets were written. And that spread over the city. And then we also had two instances where we used grant money for DWI enforcement in the month of March, and that yielded two DWI arrests. The police review for the month of March shows an interesting month. We started the month off with a polar plunge where our volunteers from the department raised about $5,000 for the worthy cause. There was the first in quite a while a joint law enforcement meeting over at the sheriff's office where all the department heads got together. Sheriff Kraft says that this is going to become more of a routine meeting to share information amongst the department heads in the county, and I think that that is a good idea. On the 29th of March, we had a semi-surprise accreditation visit where the state Department of Criminal Justice Services reviewed a random 10 critical files that we maintain for our accreditation program. And just as a reminder, there's over 600 police agencies in this town, in the state of New York, which was only 138 are accredited, and we're one of them. We're very proud of that. So they come by for routine inspections. They inspected 10 of our critical files and found them to be in good order. And according to the inspector, Ashley Shiroka, the overall program looks great, and Lieutenant Miller has done an excellent job maintaining the program. So we're very, very proud of our accreditation standard. And lastly, the last day of the month, we did donate some surplus equipment to a Ukrainian church for use in Ukraine, which is property that normally we would have to pay to destroy. That's all I have right now of the routine reporting.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Ronnie has a question or comment.
Thank you, John. Chief Moore, I just wanted to say thank you for your report. I appreciate the details. Also, congrats on getting the reaccreditation. I think that's a really good statistic to put out there that we're about 100 something out of 600 or so departments.
That's
okay. It looks like the dog has something to say over here, but the question that I had is because you stated that we received grant money that enabled us to, enabled the department to enforce traffic as well as some DWI. Is this in addition to enforcement that you're already doing, or do we kind of always have to rely on these grants in order to do those?
It's a good question. We try to do, obviously, a policeman's job, a police officer's job is to enforce violations as they're on routine patrol. Unfortunately, routine patrol gets bogged down with criminal complaints a lot and other types of complaints. What the grant money does, it gives us, allows us to add extra people to go out specifically to go out with targeting certain violations. So, we tend to do this more in the fair weather, so you start to see more patrols during the high traffic times. So it's above and beyond the normal patrol.
Yes, I mean, I understand the moving violation portion, totally understand that the grants definitely enable the department to do a better job of that, but it's just concerning to me that the DWI aspect is, that there is a spike specific to that enforcement. I'd like to see if how we can enable the department to do, regular kind of stops and enforcement of that, because that is something I'm concerned about. I have kids and obviously everybody else, drunk driving is definitely not good for anybody. So I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Okay, Dominic.
We wrote around 138, just so you know, we wrote about 138 tickets aside from the grant tickets for the quarter, and a report next quarter so we can do a comparison, but I think that you'll see that number go up much more with a better weather.
Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to it. Thank you.
Dominic.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Sir. Chief, I just a couple questions. So, it was heartwarming, and it really was a great, I don't know who came up with the idea, the surplus equipment. I think that was very thoughtful and very useful in terms of, equipment that otherwise would have been destroyed, and I think probably saving some lives. And I want to thank you and everyone involved. Secondly, without giving out trade secrets, can you give us kind of a snapshot of, these four-hour blocks of, what kind of manpower, what kind of time? Because, I think everyone thinks that, these are the answers, but there's a lot of time, effort, and manpower put into those four-hour blocks. So can you give us kind of an education on that snapshot of what that looks like?
Range anywhere from 2 to 4 additional patrols. We'll try to go into the high traffic areas. We know where we're most likely to catch speeders, for example. And DWI patrols, obviously we're going to do it we're not going to be as productive, let's say, on a Monday afternoon to do a DWI patrol as we perhaps might be on a Saturday night. So we try to target key traffic times. Usually we put up a post for officers to volunteer to put in. The money is paid for completely out of the grant, and it could range from everything from an unmarked car calling out speeds to a pursuit car to someone pulling them over down the road. It could do roving patrols for DWIs. We could do a one in concert. We do a lot of road checks in concert with the sheriff and the troopers. And also, we might even have bicycle officers do it. So it's a whole combination. The whole idea isn't to surprise people or anything like that. We sometimes even let them know ahead of time that we're going to be doing, let's say, seatbelt enforcement on the South 3rd Street. So it's a public awareness kind of thing too. So usually it targets the DWIs, cell phone usage, seatbelt usage is an old one that's been around in a while, speeders.
And then inspection too.
Yeah, okay, those ones you see on the right, you see equipment violations, a lot of those down on South 3rd Street in the Bay.
Ryan, you have a question?
Yeah, so Chief, I want to dovetail what you're talking about with the grants into an email that I have yet to receive a response back from. I know the commissioner is on vacation. He's not able to make it here tonight. But on February 10th, I had sent a notice to HPD about the possibility of changing North 6th Street in Columbia into a three-way stop. Lieutenant Miller had been able to provide me the information that, on average, that intersection has around 2 accidents per year. The one that actually was the one that perpetuated me to send you a note was involving Hudson Fire Department that was returning back from the Allen Street fire, and a motorist from Massachusetts who blew the red light on Columbia Street. And thankfully, while nobody was injured, a resident living at that intersection had reported that her vehicle was damaged. Moreover, it was the second time in 4 years that the car had been struck on the corner of 6th Street. I've actually invited, Tom, if you'll allow us, one of the residents here tonight with me, who sort of cross-sectionally here not only has seen people continuously beat that light, but when you start talking about the size of the vehicles that go down Columbia Street being the truck route, and you do simple physics in terms of mass times acceleration and the accompanying vibrations that happen from that, is incurring structural damage to her home among several others on the street. Tom, if I may, I'd like to allow Ms. Keegan to have the floor to read the letter that she's
sure.
brought forward.
May I look there?
Sure. You can stand right near this microphone.
Stand right,
sir.
Stand right here, and they'll be able to hear you right
here. Of course, there's no one behind me. It's just I'd like to look at people that speak.
Oh, you got us here.
Well, first of all, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Is that a 10-page letter?
No.
No, just go ahead.
He's teasing, that's all.
I have to leave now.
Yes, Ronnie and Duan are leaving now. I don't know what, because of Ramadan? So,
yeah,
gentlemen.
Ramadan, so we have to leave.
Okie doke.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a good class, guys.
I'm sorry, Ms. Keegan, go ahead.
Okay.
I'll review the recording, thank you.
Yeah, it'll be in the record.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to speak here this evening. My name is Dudley Keegan, but most people know me as Dee. And I live at 558 Columbia Street, which is just one door up from the traffic lights at 6th down Columbia. And I find it strange that they say there's only 2 accidents a year. They want to be there at night time, particularly in the summer, when you hear screech and bang and then thump. An accident. There's more than 2 accidents a year. I have great respect for truck drivers. My dad was one, and he was a mechanic in a race car driver. We loved trucks. And his business was resurfacing roads. But the truck drivers that are on that road and coming and going is dangerous. I don't know why Chief Moore doesn't put some police officers there to stop them. I purchased that home 22 years ago, and there was no truck drivers then. The trucks speed up and down Columbia Street My home is over 120 years old, and we have an average of anything from 9 sand trucks from 7 to 8 in the morning coming and going. And that would be 72 sand trucks per 8-hour day. Then 3 container trucks per 8-hour day, which would be 24. It would be 96 trucks per day, plus day 2 flatbed trucks come at night time under darkness. And they have tandem flatbeds behind them. They're carrying two levels of vehicles. Others are carrying concrete columns that are the length of boat trailers. And they're going through, I have seen them going through the lights, they can't even stop. Under the cover of the darkness, they do this. We also have trucks hauling tanks, 80 milli, they're tanks. And they speed unbelievably, apart from the sand trucks. They reckon they're 35 feet long, plus the cabs. Each and every one of these travels at good speed to get to the green lights. You're going to wait until somebody's going to be killed. The container trucks measure 35 feet plus the cab. The sand trucks that carry the sand measure at least 53 feet or more. Sorry, the container trucks are 53 feet. The tandem flatbeds measure 106 feet. Plus the cabs. Now, each of these big cabs have 2 exhaust pipes that run up the side. That are about this size. They go up and turn out, and they're up a good height, and they're spewing out exhaust, black exhaust, into the homes. And particularly when they're at the thing, and this exhaust goes out like that. I can't open the window, and my daughter can't open the window on their apartments because of this stuff, and because of the noise of the trucks. And that's going to cause major chest problems, you know. And they just don't slow down. And the other thing is, the weight of the sand in these trucks, if they have to stop suddenly, what is the distance they will need to stop? There's a daycare centre halfway down my block. And I was actually waiting, and I saw this lady coming out with 2 little kids. There were 2 cars coming at top speed. They couldn't stop. They had to keep going. If that was a truck or a sand truck or a container truck, what happens to the kids? I found that, you know, there's never a police officer there. The other thing is, there is no, from First Street up, they're on the First Street and Second Street, they have stop signs. After that, there's all red lights. There is no speed limit. They just take off and keep going. Now, the other day I found, going up past the park, truck route. At the top of the park, it says, you're going there and it says left, truck route. Then you go up. And when you're coming back down, it says, the truck route, you come down, it says right for truck route. It's only a small distance. Where do the trucks go after that? There's nothing else. There's no other signs, there's nothing. The only place they can go is up and down Columbia Street. Now, that street has river running under it, and it's guarded by red brick. It's not built to take those trucks and the containers. And no speed limit, nothing. They can come and go as they please, and there's nothing to stop them. Nobody stops them. On Friday morning, my house, I have 4 apartments. I have the top 2. My daughter has the one under, and the rent the one ground floor on the bottom. I go down to her every morning for coffee, and the dog gets its belly rub. So I have to do that. But I was there, and I happened to look out a window. There's a little girl standing on the far corner of the church. And she's walking up and down, but she's right out on the edge of the pavement. Nobody with her. And with that, an empty sand truck pulls right up, and she panics. Because obviously she had seen the school bus down the road. and she's running up, and then she runs down, and she's looking between the truck, and I thought, oh my God, she fell across it in the middle between the cab and the truck. And she's right on the edge of the road. The truck pulls up. He'd never see her. He'd never be able to see her. They're so high up, and there's such a distance between the cab and the container on the truck. So I pulled out, and then there she's still on the edge of the thing, three other big kids, the bus came. But she panicked, and I there's nothing I could have done. All I could do was stand and watch her getting mangled. So I would like to see those trucks taken off that. State Street would be a far better, it's a modern street, it's much wider, and the houses are further apart. They'd be much better on State Street than up and down Columbia Street. My house is falling down. My son had to brace the wall to stop it from falling out. And it's still falling. It's still moving. Trucks are doing it. And that's what's happened to all of the houses all the way down. So it's deadly. Are they going to wait until somebody gets killed to stop these trucks? Because they race. There's no speed limit. I have, Alderman Wallace saw this video. I came out, and I always, when I came out to bring the car, I always look up and down, because the car's come from nowhere. So I see the truck way up here, so I get in the car, shut the door. And with that, the lights turn green, and he's racing. And next go, I had to move over like that. He was only about that distance from my gun, from the mirror on the car, and he was speeding. He could have taken out the whole car. It's my daughter's cars. The one that Alderman Wallace was talking about that got the fireman hit. They went around and it was parked on the side of the road, down on 6th Street, and they ran into the back of it and wrecked it. Two years before that, her other car, I had just gotten out of it. And I called, you know, you've Columbia Street and you've 6th Street, so this corner here, I call it the suicide corner. So I got out, parked the car there, walked in, next to her, boom, and I go, I go out. Her car is up on top of an SUV. And she works in the motor vehicles for County Cali. And I go into her and I go, what? The car is dead. It was up on top of an SUV. An SUV coming up, this one was on her, texting. Car hit her. Or she hit the car and it went straight up on top of. And every summer, there's 3-4 accidents every summer because they come. And then they come the wrong way down 6th Street. And they come out. And you tell them to stop and they go. And out they go onto Columbia Street. But the tankers, the containers, the sand trucks, they've got to be stopped. They're going to kill somebody. But the city of Hudson is going to have massive lawsuits because of all the houses that's damaged because of it.
Mrs. Keegan, thank you very much. So, I could listen to you all night.
We didn't know Irish, so we'd be gifted the guy.
But we do have to move along, and I want to give the chief... You're welcome. The chief a quick chance to respond. I mean, I know, you know, there are obviously... The truck traffic is a huge issue and topic here in the city, and it's being addressed in certain ways and not in certain others. Well, let's let the chief give his response.
Chief Moore.
Yes, it's Chief Moore, the one and only.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate your observations. Living on a truck route is not, at times, got to be not the greatest situation, living condition, with trucks rumbling by. I do know that the state police does commercial vehicle enforcement routinely on the city limits where the trucks are inspected and weighed. We can check with them to see what their statistics are for our location. I know that the truck route is being discussed all the time. I would prefer to not have the trucks at all in the city of our city, but we know that that's probably not going to happen. At any given time, I did report that we've written 20 moving violations, a couple DWIs this month. We're doing traffic enforcement. I don't know what more to add. I really believe your observations. been willing to work with whatever change can be brought by rerouting the truck route. There's always this discussion about the Bay Road that might alleviate some of those problems. I appreciate your observations, and I'm aware of them.
Can I answer that? Sure. I have never seen a state trooper standing at those lights or anywhere near those lights, any time of the day or night.
Next time, let's see what Trooper J. Ryan Anderson posts down there often. He submits reports to the state. And by the time you have the next meeting come around, I can contact the Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Unit and see what their activity is on the outskirts of Hudson as the trucks come in and out. And if there's light activity, if they haven't done an enforcement unit recently, I can, as I have in the past, request them to set up on South 3rd Street to help us out with the enforcement. Commercial vehicle is the enforcement is a highly trained unit. We at Hudson Police, for example, would not be able to train our people to that level of enforcement. That's why they have a special unit. So what I'll do for you is I will ask tomorrow morning when the unit opens up if they've done any enforcement in the city of Hudson or in the town of Greenport regarding commercial vehicles. And if they haven't recently, then I will request them and I'll report back to you. I've seen Trooper Anderson down there. I've talked to him frequently when they're weighing vehicles in the little cutoff in the little swampy area down there. So I can report back to you to see if we can get some more enforcement by that unit.
Thank you, Chief. Mrs. Keegan, can you submit your letter so we can put it in the record?
Oh, yeah.
Please.
This is my other little thing, Harriet. It's just on the very back is the amendments, the constitutional amendments.
Okay.
That,
thank you.
Should cover us, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Margaret, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I have a question about that corner. Chief, I think this is what Ryan was getting at. It does appear to be
it's a
very dangerous corner that needs to be looked at and have some alternative.
I have all videos on this.
I have
videos on this of the dangerous trucks.
I think the easiest thing that I was proposing is just the stop sign to slow the trucks down to start with, because then it becomes truly a traffic violation element, which is well within our ability to enforce.
Right. But the thing that we were talking about the most recent towing on that corner was that I think it was at least the second in a couple of years, but there was another one like also on that corner. So obviously when there's something about the intersection that parked cars are getting hit, there's got to be some problem with the intersection. You know, yes, people will blow lights, they'll do whatever, but I don't know, Chief, if that's in your area to look at that, or who we're looking at that.
What you're saying is the physical construction of the corner is inherently dangerous. Now, I've reported to you that despite your observations, there's only several accidents there statistically. We can only report what happens.
Right.
And I reported that there was only two major accidents there on the corner. Now, two could be a lot, especially if someone's hurt. But if you're talking about the dangers there, it seems to me that the structure of the truck route turning onto that street is what inherently is the problem there. So,
I don't know the numbers. I'm not a traffic expert.
Yeah.
But it just seems that it is an intersection that should be looked at.
Yeah, Chief,
they're
not turning on. They're coming straight up from 3rd Street, mm-hmm. or going straight down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the ways is reversed. But that is not the problem. The problem is people coming from Warren Street onto Columbia Street. The firemen, they would have. They had a choice: either hit the lamppost and kill themselves, or hit my daughter's car parked down the side mm-hmm. street. So it's just a straight road, and they use it as a racetrack all the way up.
Okay, thank you. And as the chief promised, he will look into this further, and your letter will be entered into the record. Unfortunately.
Yeah,
Yes.
Just so I'm straight, just so I know what I'm looking into, we're talking about commercial vehicles
right.
that are on the truck route, but also you were just discussing Columbia and 6th Street, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I think what I had asked about a while back, I don't know that I did it in a formal meeting, but Brian certainly sent an email. I just have a question about the safety of that intersection of Columbia and 6th, because it's more than chance that somebody parked on that corner has a car totaled twice in two or three years. I mean, there's obviously something wrong. And I think Brian's suggestion was putting in stop signs, making a stop on all three-way, because 6th is a one-way street. I mean, something like that to look at it and evaluate whether or not it's anything to be done to make it safer.
And also include
that's completely separate from the whole truck discussion.
Right, but that improves pedestrian safety for the farmers market and some as well.
Okay, let's move on. Thank you, Chief. Sorry, Theo.
Yeah, this is I think maybe something that just bridges both police and DPW. So I just wanted to bring it up while
okay.
Chief is here, and feel free to punt to Rob when he presents. But Chief, we had spoken about a dangerous illegal parking spot on the corner of Short and State Street, and I just wanted to get an update on that. There was an accident a few days back right at that intersection, as far as I know, I just walked by there because I live on that street. The parking space was painted yellow, but there's still a very clear designation for a parking spot. It's very confusing, and I just wanted to know what the update was on that.
Yeah, I think I talked to Alder Moranti about it, and we're going to repaint and also provide signage.
Okay.
I just haven't started the painting season yet.
Okay, yeah, I think the sign would go a long way as well.
I think we might have even ordered the sign already to fix that corner. I agree with you, and sometimes cars park there, and there's no visibility as you pull out.
Yeah.
That will be repaired once the tree painted and there's a sign out.
Okay, and then I guess just, you know, while we're adding, you know, little remarks for patrol, I think if, you know, adding that to the enforcement checklist as well, it's I see cars there almost every single day parked.
Okay, thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Moving right along, before we go to Rob, our labor attorney, Ellen DeFeo Keene, is here, and I would like her to speak to the first resolution, and including to answer Margaret's question. So, Shaheem, could you put up the first resolution, please? We're going to do that. We'll go back to that after, because she's by the hour. And Rob is not.
I think I'm going to have to do the resolution.
Oh, okay.
Because it's Shaheen.
Okay.
So.
Who is that?
No public questions for the chief?
No, not right now. We have more important business for the moment. We can get back to that if the chief wants to stay, but right now we need to do this.
What do you want pulled up, Tom?
The resolution for the the first resolution.
Resolution adopting a compensatory time off policy.
Oh, okay.
Correct, yes. Well, I think you all council members, you know Elena, she's spoken to us before. She's going to explain what this is all about and answer any questions about the resolution. It's, as you know, it was originally in response to an audit done by the comptroller's office under Thomas DiNapoli. So, Elena, would you like to take us through it?
Sure, no problem. First, let me apologize to Chief Moore if I bumped you off of the agenda for the moment, sir. Please excuse me. As President DiPietro said, you had an audit. One of the recommendations of the audit was for you to have a formal compensatory time off policy. This policy I'll walk you through it, but it's designed to address the various concerns that had been previously raised in the audit and which you as a board had agreed to address by resolution in 2020. So the first thing it does is, who is it applicable to? It's going to be applicable to non-exempt. That means people that are entitled to receive overtime for hours worked. So it's going to cover any city employee that's an hourly employee who is not subject to a collective bargaining agreement. They're not in a union. It's also going to apply to hourly employees who are in a union if the unit specifically opts into this policy. We can't require them to do it because we'd have to bargain with that. But you do have three units. We started the discussions with two of them. We'll continue with the third and see if this policy works for them. We do have indication, at least with one of them, that they have every intention of opting in. And we're in discussions with the second. We'll be in discussions with the third. Who does it not? It also applies to your full-time salaried employees. That means that they get paid the same amount of hours, you know, if they work 60 or if they work their 40. And they're not elected, but they're your, you know, they're your managers. And they help the city run. It doesn't apply to elected officials. It doesn't apply to personal staff of the elected officials. It doesn't apply to part-time employees. And it doesn't apply to anybody who is part of a collective bargaining agreement that group has not opted in. Let me be very clear. Somebody say in the CSCA, and they haven't agreed yet, but we've started this discussion, they can't individually agree to opt in. Either the entire bargaining unit opts in or they don't. Okay. So this policy, if you can scroll to the next page, if that's, thank you so much. All right, so a couple of things. One thing is, if you're hourly, you either work 37 and a half hours a week or you work 40 hours a week for the city. If you work 37 and a half hours, you could earn comp time between 37 and a half and 40 at hour for hour. Anything over 40, that by law under the Fair Labor Standards Act, they must be compensated at time and a half. So if they work 42 hours, they would get, for those 2 hours over 40, they'd earn 3 hours of comp time. Exempt employees, you have no legal obligation to provide them with comp time. So in their settings, it would be hour for hour. Now, some of you may say, well, then if we're not legally required to provide comp time to these individuals, why on earth would we do it? I think part of the goal with some of this is to try to provide a setting that would allow for some of your managers who are working very hard, who may be required to work outside the normal hours, to be able to utilize their comp time for time off at a later date. Now, if you can scroll down a little bit more for me. Okay, election. So the first thing that comes up every time a comp time policy is out there is, do you have a mechanism in place to ensure that people aren't just willy-nilly racking up comp time? First and foremost, they have to be approved. So if an employee works beyond their normal hours, their manager must in fact approve it. They can't just unilaterally decide to stay and say, I'm going to work later. It has to be for a specific purpose for the benefit of the city that's been approved. Also, with regard to your managers, they have to talk to either their commissioner or the mayor, depending on who they are and who they report to make sure that the reason they're doing it makes sense. Here's a good example. On the weekend sometimes, the director of the youth department may have to put on a program on a weekend that would be normally outside of her normal work hours. That might be a real good example when somebody, she might want to earn comp time, you want to reward that. Can scroll down and talk about the bank. Okay, so if you are non-exempt, you can bank up to 120 hours of compensatory time in a comp in a year. So that's all well and good, but actually it's just non-exempt, so we'll make that one small change. If you're exempt, you can earn up to 350. Here's the difference. If you are an exempt employee, you are never paid out for your comp time earned. If there is a benefit, you can take it off if it allows you to have your unit, your department still work efficiently. But the city will never pay a salaried employee for their comp time when they leave or at the end of the year. somebody who is not exempt by law, if they work more, you're required to pay them for all hours worked. So you're not giving them anything more than you're otherwise required. So if they don't utilize their time, they can carry some over, but the goal is that you're paying it pretty close to when they earn it, so that you're not paying it to them at a later time at a higher rate of pay. And so E walks you through the payout provisions for exempt and non-exempt, very clearly saying exempt is not paid. This is consistent with the resolution that you passed that said you will establish these policies. Also has a mechanism in there for these slips of comp time to be turned into the master, to the master payroll keeper, and I believe that's Tracy Delaney. Tracy can correct me if I'm wrong. So that there is a check and a balance. So you have the department heads that are looking at it and the commissioners that are looking at it, but you also have the master timekeeper looking at it, which is one of the things that the Office of the State Comptroller wanted, was to ensure that there was dual checks and balances. Mm-hmm. All right? Just to be clear, I just want to reiterate, remember, a non-exempt employee must, by law, be paid for every hour that they work. And so it's not like you're opting into something special. And I'll answer any questions you have, but that's kind of the highlights of what you have there.
Thank you, Elena. Margaret has a question.
Yes. So,
of course.
Thank you. In the report from the audit, one of the things that I noticed in their description of things that they found was the issue of employees working through their lunch and getting comp time during their lunch hour. And while it wasn't, most employees didn't do this very much, there was one person who had 56 times used their lunch hour. So first off, to my knowledge, you are not permitted to work through your lunch for the full lunch. You're actually required to take a break. But I didn't see anything in this policy that specifically addresses the issue of when a person can put in, yes, it has to be approved and so forth, but there was no language in here that addressed that lunch hour issue that was identified by the auditors.
Okay, so 2 points. One, you're absolutely correct. Anyone who is a non-exempt employee must take a minimum of 30-minute lunch hour, and you cannot work through your lunch hour. You can't say, I'm going to work through my lunch hour and leave early. The reason it is not in the comp time policy is because it is in the time and attendance policy that the city previously passed. And I believe if you look at this, it does reference that. So we didn't want to start it from scratch. We just wanted to talk about the comp time piece.
And then the only other observation I had, the company I work for, we used to have, banking of hours. And we didn't ever have comp time, but we had, you could bank hours limitlessly. And actually, your point that you want people to take their time close to when they have earned it is a very valid one, because we would have people who were with the company for 20 years, and they may have come in at a particular rank, and then by the time they're leaving, they're being paid at a much, much higher salary for that time than the time at which they earned. And it actually became unsustainable. I would just observe that 350 hours of up to being able to carry over up to 350 is more than generous. I think that's very high. I don't know how that number was arrived at.
So let me stop you right there. The 350 only applies to your exempt employees,
yes,
and they can only use it for time off, and they do not get paid for that at any point. So it's not like they're going to retire and say, pay me my comp time. You never pay it out.
But it's still an awful lot of time. That's 10 weeks. Post.
Correct. But that's when the manager has to control how it's utilized.
Okay.
And so one of the things that we talked about when we put that together was people need to start to use it. They can't just say, I'm taking 10 weeks off and I come to work.
Right.
One, they have a problem with the retirement
right.
system.
Right.
Two, they have to use it in a way that actually works for what's out there. I think one of the things they were trying to do is realize that they had some managers that had some high banks that still have several years with the city, and they wanted to give them a reasonable opportunity to utilize their time and not lose that.
Okay. And so to your point that you're not actually ever paying your exempt employees, they can only take time off. Well, you are actually paying them, because if their salary is, let's say, it's, $30, $40 an hour, right now, today, and I am going to take a week's vacation. I'm going to be paid for that vacation at my current salary. So maybe when I started, my salary was $20 an hour, and now it's 40 or 50, so I am actually being paid, if you will, at that increased rate. So it's not, strictly speaking, true that you're not having to pay for it. It's not just that you have to pay when the person leaves, which this policy doesn't do. But I'm just making that observation. I understand that there may be people with very long history with the city, and that you don't want to take something away that they have banked, which is certainly very reasonable. But I think on a going forward basis, you could consider less. You could grandfather in somebody who already has this much in the bank, but going forward, for accrued during a particular year in 2022 or 2023. You may not carry over more than a smaller number than that to the upcoming year.
I think that's a more than reasonable comment, and I would obviously defer to whatever this council would like this policy to look like. So obviously, I will defer to the president as to how you would all like to proceed. I don't disagree with that. Was the thought process behind it,
yeah.
Councilwoman Morris, just so you know where that number came from.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't have any other observations.
Okay, anyone else? Great. Thank you, Elena, for joining us and explaining those things. Now, let's get back to where we were.
You need any more?
No, I don't think so, and I'll let you know for next week if there's any changes or anything.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. All have a good evening. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, did the chief stay with us?
Easier.
I don't know if we had any more questions for the chief. I don't see any hands raised. So let's move on to Rob, if he stayed with us, I hope. Yeah, there he is. Rob? You're muted if you're there. Oh, no, not this again.
Hello?
Yes.
Come on.
We can hear you. I think.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Hello.
We didn't get a report, did we?
We've gotten your eye.
I sent it late. I mean, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Okay, let's go.
All right, so I just want to continue from last month. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Sharing screen. All right, so where I left off with water department last month, after we removed the pig from the pipe and we did some backfill and restoration, there was an issue with the drainage culvert from the state highway, so we went through and repaired that. That was something that was removed during the excavation. Also, if you remember, there was this perpetual leak over in front of the probation building at 610 State Street. And we had this company come in with this very professional equipment. And they were able to find that leak. And believe it or not, the leak that was coming out at the corner of 6th and State Street was actually coming from up here where you see by the entrance to the bank, the G Bank. So the water was actually traveling almost two blocks underground before it was popping up in the water valve down there. And this is the contractor using the equipment. This is what it used to look like, a little bit of ice, the water was coming out of the valve here. And this is the break that he found two blocks away. So that was pretty exciting stuff. Just one of these things is something that I provided to the council a couple of years ago. It's just kind of like an overview of sidewalk and where to go, and some portions of the sidewalk code are in the code, some are in the appendices, and some are in the charter. So I just wanted to let you know. It's just a little bit of a summary page for that. This is regarding some of the park stuff. I did this as part of a report to the mayor and the commissioner a year ago.
trying to show where the staffing is assigned and the work that they actually do. So from June of 2020, you'll see this heading here is all pink. So technically all the employees stuff should be pink, but you see a lot of purple, which is refuse, and a lot of green, which is parks. So the whole idea of this is to show that how often people from either the street maintenance or, well, this is some of the changes, but, you know, mostly the street maintenance, the guys who should be working on street repair are actually getting pulled off that work and sending over to mowing lawns because there's just not enough personnel there. You know, and we've discussed this last time, the budget's $150,000 for, you know, 30-some-odd park properties. It's, you know, this is how we're able to do it, but it's not the way we should be doing it. Obviously, you know, there should be an increase in the parks budget. You know, we should just have more seasonal part-timers, and, you know, there's, you know, this old equipment that gets requested year after year and gets denied year after year, but, you know, they do need some small pickup trucks, and, you know, there's, you know, something else is a need for consultants. Like, we don't have a plumber on staff. When we need a plumber, we contract it out. We don't have electricians on staff. When we need them, we contract them out. So, you know, there's calls for, you know, different types of trained arborists or, you know, things of that nature. Those are, you know, those are certainly professionals, that landscapers that can be contracted for specific things. A lot of tree work exceeds our capability. We only have a 30-foot bucket truck, and, you know, most of your hauler, your tree company is a 60-foot truck. So, you know, we're just not capable of doing big tree work. But this is something that, you know, should be considered as part of the budget process. The, and, you know, just kind of revisiting the vehicles, in this historical vehicle inventory, which I shared a year or so, there were 5 vehicles that were taken out of service over a 2-year period. And, you know, some of these had well over 100,000 miles, they had over 25 years of service, and, you know, there was no replacement for them. So, you know, we do need vehicles desperately. You know, a lot of the vehicles are still barely limping along. It's just because we make the request, and the, you know, the requests say, well, you know, during budget season, and it's determined that's not a good time, and I've heard that for a number of years from now. We did some work over at the police department. This is just one of our guys over there. The police department actually procured the doors, or had them given to him, I can't remember. And so our guy went over and did some sheetrock and framing for him so they could, you know, better manage their facility. We had some, this is just a picture working on some garbage cans for Oakdale, the youth department. And we have some, you know, just continue working on the barricade shed. Just as more of the winter stuff, which, you know, thankfully we're out of, but it gives you an idea of, you know, the amount of the salt, the corrosiveness that gets on everything and under everything. You know, we have this pretty powerful hot water steam jenny that blasts it all off, so you can see, you know, a lot of the salt is missing from the augers and such. Polishes them up pretty good, too. Just revisiting something that was made its all its way to the Register Star and Blockville. There was a question about, you know, everybody's favorite subject, the garbage bag machine. I can't understand why everybody's so obsessed with it. It's just a vending machine, and people use them every day to buy all sorts of things. But in this instance, there was, you know, a non-credible complaint that it wasn't working. And so what I did is, you know, here's the log from the day, credit card, you know, our. This was the post that was actually in Cyber World, and this is the log showing that it was working. You know, I can't be responsible for operator error. But it comes up all the time, and it's certain questions. The reality of it is before the machine, you had to go into City Hall between 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock, Monday through Friday, and you had to go to the garbage bag ladies and pay cash. You couldn't use a credit card. So, you know, this is 24 hours. It allows to accept cash and credit card. Is there a time when, you know, it says cash only? It happens, you know. You have a 3-day weekend, and, you know, the dollar points get depleted, and, you know, it happens. It's a mechanical machine. But outside of that, it's significantly more,
That's what I'm looking for. Anyway, it works better than the old system by far. Just some cemetery work. You know, we had a contractor who, when we do our paving projects, we get the millings that come off the road, and you know, we have, you know, some uses for them, but not many. So this is one of the tree contractors wanted some millings. We gave him those millings in exchange. He gave us about $5,000 worth of tree work. This instance, you see the 60-foot boom is out there cutting trees along the cemetery. So a little bit of bartering. This is actually a little bit old information. This change story. This is for the Ferry Street Bridge. We have to contract we put money in escrow for them for their flaggers. These flaggers are for guys that are actually on the train track and will tell the work staff to stop when the train is coming through. And also control the trains coming through, make sure there's no conflict between train and construction project. So the initial money that they wanted up front was $554,000. Of course, we went back to them and said that's ridiculous. And so the numbers were pared back down. The new number is $190,000. But we do have to give that to them in advance for the contract. The good news is that we had to give them $150,000 for their design review, and I believe they only used about $15,000. So that money will be coming back, but we have to give them this money first before they'll return that other money. It's Amtrak, it's the way they roll. We also, you know, there were some additional project costs to, you know, bump up the, you know, the Historic Preservation Commission had suggested that the truss and the fencing be vinyl coated and black, and so that adds an additional $300,000 to the construction costs. So we're working with DOT we want to make sure we have all the appropriate funding in place, and I'll get more to that in the next report, which is for April. Starting with the sewer department, we had $80,000 in revenue for February. This was just the past Thursday, and you can see this is a rain gauge, and it's just below 3. So 3 inches, nearly 3 inches of rain fell that Thursday. Created a lot of havoc for us. We had several issues. Here it just shows you the shacks basically underwater, or certainly waterfront property. We had massive amounts of grit. You can see the grit not only filling up this 1 yard tote, but it's also on the floor over here, and it was all above the conveyor as well. So if you want to drop the rain, what?
Rob, I'm not seeing anything move on the screen if you're typing or moving the camera.
Oh,
no.
Hold on.
It was sent very late.
It went today, sometime today?
Yeah, I sent it. It didn't come until
okay.
The
flight.
Oh, okay. Then I was wrong on that. It came up.
Alright, so this is the fruit on main gauge. So this is all the brick that was filled up the 1 yard tote, and there was some extra here on the ground. So when you have these heavy rain events, you know, we pulled the grid out so that way it doesn't damage the pumps and the processes. But you get these heavy storms and a lot comes. This was the Mill Street pump station over here, and in this instance, the force main that the pump station pushed into had a lot of grit in it, and it was obstructing the flow. So this is a 6-inch centrifugal pump that we use quite often. And in this instance, we were able to use the old bypass for the construction project and physically force it through. We got the force main cleared, and away it went. Sewer. The Front Street Stormwater Project, as you'll see, a lot of trucks around. We're doing test pits right now. The idea is we have to find out where exactly the elevation of all the other utilities. There's gas mains that conflict. There's water mains. They need to make sure that they have enough clearance between them and that they can maintain the pitch as far as the new project. So that's what they're doing now. They'll be ordering pipes and structures within the next couple of weeks. And the real meat and potatoes of the project probably start in a couple months.
The water project, this is our finished water tank here. Every 5 years, we have a team, an underwater team, come in and conduct inspections. They have to get, you know, scuba gear, and they go into the tank, and they have diagnostic equipment, they have cameras, and the cameras, all the equipment is in this trailer, and it sends air to them, so there's quite a bit that goes into it. Then we do this to make sure we don't have any fissures or that took place this past week, and we do get a video of the report as well as a full engineering report. So everything looks very good. So the tank is now 15 years old, and I believe it has a 50-year warranty, so it's good. If anybody's seen this, it's online. It's a page from the Water Tap Book. And this is from a lower Allen Street, just one of the pages I replicated for you. The point here is there was a little bit of hysteria over the water quality report. Let's just clear this up. The annual water quality report is a chemical and biological analysis of the drinking water. It checks for organic and inorganic contaminants. It checks for a whole host of potential health risks, including everything from microbial to to PFOAs. And that report says overwhelmingly that the water is safe to drink, what it means. It's just that simple. Now, there's questions about people who don't care for the taste of it or whatever. That's okay. That's subjective. I happen to like it. But it's also important to understand that this is an old city with old infrastructure, and a lot of these houses, this tap book shows these lower houses in Allen Street, 1876, 1875, and this 10 that's here, that's not 2010, that's 1910. So a lot of these houses still have original plumbing, and your average house has about 5 to 10 gallons of standing water inside the pipes in your house. So if you're drawing off your pipes and taking 6 ounces or whatever, I'm not saying you should, let the faucets run all the time, but it's reasonable that the water, if it's getting discolored, it's most likely from the plumbing inside of your house, because it's just laying in there over the course of the day. So that's just something to clarify. Now, just on some DPW things, these are just examples of a lot of what we encounter when we have to excavate. This is this picture on the right is actually up on Prison Alley in the 500 block. In this instance, an old stone sewer, bright stone, not brick, not concrete, but the actually laid up stone with some clay around it, fell into, and so we had to go pull this out, repiece it, pour some concrete on it. But this is pretty deep. This is about 15 feet deep, so you see the trench box here, and he had a gas main running right through it. So this is, some of the stuff. This, the second picture here, this was a much more shallow. This is a sinkhole on Partition Street, just below 3rd. But it gives you an idea of what we find in the ground. So number one, this is a 12-inch water main. Number two, this is the old 16-inch forest main that used to pump river water to the sand filter that was off the top of Rossman Avenue. That was abandoned as a forest main in the early 1900s when the reservoir was put online. We now use it as a storm line. The actual stone sewer is down here. This number 4 is actual fiber optic duct from Verizon. And 5 is the lateral that came from the property owner. And the little green dye over here is where we dye that. And it turns out the sinkhole was because the property owner's lateral was broken. So we turned the hole over to the property owner, and they got contracted to come fix it and close up the hole. This is just kind of like a diary of a catch basin. This catch basin was, pretty much destroyed. It's just old, and it couldn't be repaired anymore, so it was demolished. You see the new one here with some pipes ready to come into it, and then at the end, we concrete around it, set the break on top, and, when the basketball plant opens, we'll bring this up, the new blacktop, and bring it up
to grade so that water runs into it, and it's a new working functioning catch basin. Let's see. Not to, you know, I don't want to get involved with the whole shared streets and what is or what isn't happening. I just wanted to tell you from the DPW end what is there. These are the 185 blocks. They're still down there. We own them. Whatever you need them, we have them. If you don't, that's fine too. But more importantly are these the 33 planters that were also used in between the blocks. And so if there's going to be some kind of some version of it this year, and you intend to use these planters, you're going to need some money for someone to come and do some TLC to it, but also to replant, because this stuff's all dead. So if you're going to give it consideration, you're definitely going to want to charge somebody for that privilege, because you're going to incur some expenses here, unless you're just using blocks only, or, you know, then that's another option. So I just want to bring that to your attention when we discuss to fee or not to fee. Let's see, Promenade Hill. So we started setting the steps. And so a lot of people see this concrete and they're like, oh my God, it's done. This isn't done. This is the foundation for all the stone. I'll remind you that there's about $400,000 in cut stone in this project. And it's really going to be quite a spectacle when it's done. It's going to be beautiful. But in this instance, you know, this is the stone that's set, as part of the set. This will actually go down to like a little plaza, which will have pavers in it. And you can see the drains that are here. The pavers will be just above the drains, so the water will go over there and into this catch basin. They see, you know, if you see the stone on the side, it'll be like, oh, look at that concrete. Well, the concrete is not what's finished. You're going to have this stone veneer that's going to be, this is all very delicate, it's not only labor intensive, it's also certainly something that requires a skill. This is definitely the trades at their best. And so, you know, this is really, this is just a sample of this wall and this veneer is going to go all the way to the top. You've got these stones, and then you have this bluestone coping that's going to go across. And it's really going to be quite beautiful. You know, it's just going to take time. Last week they lost 2 days because of rain, so there's a lot of things that come into play. But you had a crappy park for 4 years, so you're gonna have a beautiful park, and when it's ready, it's ready. Just for the Ferry Street Bridge, I didn't see it on the paperwork today, but it'll be ready for the formal. We just have a change order for the professional services for the design, and the real reason is, you know, this thing was supposed to be constructed probably 2 years ago, and the design phase was never supposed to go for 5 years. But because of the railroads and DOT, this thing just got pushed out. So there was just a lot of additional work that wasn't the original scope. They had to do NEPA, which is the environmental review, the federal environmental. They had to do that twice because the first one timed out. And there was just other criteria that DOT added that wasn't in the original scope. So the change order, I believe, for $26,000, that should be before you next week. And as far as the bridge is concerned, you know, the right-of-way documents are all complete. That was a major undertaking. We're finalizing our easements, utility easements with National Grid. We're really optimistic that this thing will advertise sometime maybe around September for a construction start date of March. The reason that it's that long is, you know, we're not ordering you're not ordering pipe or stones. This is precast concrete bridge. It's going to take all of 6 months to construct. So, but we're getting there, and we'll get there. It looks like, you know, we're there. So, all right.
Okay, Ryan.
I'll keep it quick. Rob, in the fall, we had talked about a couple of different residents in the city that had reached out about getting curbs repainted. Now that the weather's getting a little bit better, do you have an idea of when the team will be out to start doing some of that? I know you said it has to be like 70 to 75 for adequate conditions.
Yeah, when it comes to the paint that goes on the curb, or the
you know, the stripes for parking spots, that has to be pretty warm. You're talking July. The road really needs to be cooking for that stuff to stick pretty well. You know, when it comes to, like, the stuff with the crosswalks, the thermal plastic, we have to melt that down with a heat gun so we can start that first. So we're going to, you know, we'll actually start some of the crosswalk stuff first, and then we'll get to those yellow things. But, okay. Yeah, once we get going on it, it happens. It goes pretty quickly.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions from council members? Theo.
This is just a wild card question, but I just have noticed that driving into Hudson on 3rd Street, a number of large potholes have opened up in the past few weeks. I'm just wondering where we're at on that. They seem to have gotten considerably bigger in the past week or two.
Yeah, so this is the story. We did a paving project there, one of our biannual chips projects, and we had that section of 3rd Street on there. I believe it was either 2015 or 17. I want to say 2015. So we came in with a contractor and we milled it. Once we milled it, we observed that most of the concrete subbase had some issues. But at this stage of the game, we didn't have the material quantities to do a full reconstruction, and we hadn't planned on it, so we didn't have the time. So what we did is we put together what we did. We went heavy on the binder and then for the top coat to try and hold it together, and obviously it just didn't hold. It's getting hammered with the truss, it's getting hammered with the faucet. So now we're at the problem is DOT CHIPS money would absolutely be able to pay for this, except when we did the project in 2015, we have to certify that this is a 10-year repair. And so we really can't do it again with CHIPS money for another 3 years. So that said, we're going to start doing some of it in-house. You know, we don't have a huge material and supply budget to begin with. But we're, you know, I just spoke with it again today with my foreman. We're going to probably do some nighttime excavation and then come in the morning with some fabric and stone and then go heavy with the binder. And we're probably going to have to go down about 2 feet to get underneath. It looks like when the concrete was poured originally, the term is it was green and it wasn't fully cured before they started driving on it. And it's fractured, so it turns into basically, you know, I don't want to say rubble, but it's not a solid chunk of concrete. When we did try to, you know, hold everything together, it just not down. So we're going to have to excavate that all out, we'll go below it with new stone, subbase, some fabric, put in some binder, and then put a top coat on. So we actually talked about that today, and we're going to be working on we don't have the budget to get it all done this year, but we're certainly going to attack as much as the really, really bad areas. And get that cleaned up.
Any other questions from council members?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Oh, Vicky.
Yes. So I was wondering, how many seasonal employees do you have per year? And the shortage of them, is it has to do with budget purely, or it's just hard to find people?
Well, The cemetery has 4 seasonal part-timers budgeted this year, and I believe we have, a lot of them return from year to year, so I believe we have the 4 lined up. The as far as other, there aren't any seasonal, there's no appropriation for seasonal part-timers anywhere else in DPW or parks or anything like that. So right now we have, in parks, you have 2 full-timers and then 1 part-timer who's like, he's a 52-week part-timer. He's not just seasonal. But that's why I tried to show in that other group, graph, that's why DPW guys that are actually supposed to be working on street work get pulled off of street work to go manage the parks, because there really should be probably 2 seasonal part-timers in the parks department to help manage the sheer volume of property that we have. Like I said, it's over 32 properties that we have to mow and maintain.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Bill, make it quick, please. We have a long agenda still.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Hey, Rob, last November, after all the CHIPS roads were repaved, you were at a meeting, you claimed that you had to raise the valves that were sunk in to keep the road smooth. And I'm just wondering why so many of them weren't raised. I see many, many of them, especially a huge one, a wide and deep one at the corner of Columbia and, 3rd Street and Long Alley. And, but there's a whole bunch of them all around town. Why weren't they all raised to the level of the street?
Well, because the riders come in 1-inch increments and the road is crowned. So what happens is if to go up to that next inch, if any part of the valve is going to stick up where it would catch snow plows and catch vehicles, then we have to go to the next side lower, and that next side lower is a full inch below.
Okay.
But Rob,
that was asked and answered, Bill. Asked and answered. Move along.
Okay. This is ridiculous. Around the armory on State Street, on Fifth Street, on Short Street, there are painted parking space lines, handicap symbols painted yellow paint for the fire hydrant. Did you guys do that, or did Galvin do it?
Galvin did it.
And you allowed them to, or they did it without your knowledge?
They asked permission to do it.
And you allowed them to?
I believe it was at the request of the planning board that wanted to have designated park spaces.
Your recollection is that the planning board allowed?
No, you didn't listen, Bill. He said they asked the planning board.
My recollection is the planning board asked them to paint spaces.
Okay.
The planning board asked them to put spaces. Really?
Yep, that's the answer, Bill. Move along. One more question. Come on.
Okay. Rob, are your DPW workers, do they have a uniform policy, or can they wear anything they want, including shirts with advertisements for local businesses?
They have a uniform allowance, and there's no restriction on what they wear.
You guys can wear sweatshirts and T-shirts with have contractors' names and numbers on it, advertising?
They can even wear a T-shirt that says, I love Bill Houston.
No kidding.
Yep.
Our last question.
No, that's it, Bill. Sorry. That's it for tonight. We got a lot to go, and you've been answered. So, moving right along. I don't see anybody from the council. We need to go to our resolutions. Do you need to leave,
Mark? Sir?
Do you need to leave?
Are we just going to go to resolutions now?
Yeah, unless you want to do this whole thing right now, or you want to...
I'm talking. It's okay.
Okay. Just trying to help it. Okay, resolution number one. This is the compensatory time off policy. Do I have an introduction? Amber, and a second. Oh, thank you, Margaret. Next is appointing Commissioner Deeds. Ryan, and do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Amber. The next is accepting a senior center donation of $388.65. Ryan? And a second, please. You're here.
I can second. Yeah, I can second that.
Theo.
I will gladly second that.
That's good. You should never second something without being happy about doing it. Next is... Let's see. Oh, this is declaring a negative declaration for Pearl's Bridge Street connectivity project. Amber, second. Ryan. The next is accepting donations totaling $21,023.52 from the Oakdale Plunge to support the Fire Department Water and Rescue and Dive Team.
Introduce.
Ryan.
Second.
Theo. Now, the next, you may not know this, we there's a every year certain firemen qualify for a very, very small service award program, and we have to approve the list. We approve of a list provided by the commissioner. Can I have an introduction? Ryan.
I'll second.
Amber.
No pressure on Margaret to second? So quiet up there.
Well, she's in a rush, so I don't want her to have to stay long afterwards.
Democracy waits for no one. So democracy waits for no one.
Can I share that you have a very ill dog at home? The next is authorizing funds for payroll chargebacks to cover the Housing Justice Director. This is a payback to 2021. Ryan?
Please. I'll second.
And Amber. Another donation from the First Reformed Church on behalf of the Fire Department. Ryan? Amber. the next is authorizing the mayor to enter an agreement with CGI Digital for their community showcase video program.
Just a question about that. What exactly are we getting? Like, we're getting video.
I think Mr. Hoffman can speak to that. Mayor Lade Hoffman can speak to that.
What are they getting, actually, more clearly, what are they getting from us? Because I see that we're not responsible for any cost.
Correct, yeah. So their revenue model is through paid sponsor ad space on a digital page where the videos will live. So they will go out to other organizations, businesses, to have digital ad space around a video product that they create and they film here in Hudson with our help, if we want to provide it to them. And then they will basically have sponsors of that video in order to account for the costs.
Where are they based?
Rochester.
Rochester.
I don't really understand the purpose of this.
This is to create a video or series of videos showcasing different elements of the community, from our parks to organizations to the citizens community as a whole, to include as an introductory video on our website, for example, that allows people to have a virtual tour.
And
basically,
who is going to have control over the content?
The mayor's office will be working with the company and anyone on the council who would like to participate.
How will this interface in any way with the tourism subcommittee?
It absolutely can.
Could. Yeah.
This contract is just to allow us to begin the process and get on their filming schedule, and then we can discuss how the product actually looks later on.
Give cut notes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Give cut notes and feedback. And
yeah.
Creative.
Introduction? Amber? Second?
I will second.
The next resolution also can be spoken to by Mayoral Aide Hoffman. It's an organizational chart, just for the convenience of...
I support your mural board. I'll introduce.
Yeah.
Ryan? And a second?
Yeah. I also really support it. I think it's really great.
Well, there you go, Mayoral Aide Hoffman.
Hey, Mr. Hoffman, I have a question.
Yes.
Regarding the org chart, one thing that I was interested in looking at it was, would there be any value in delineating city-funded versus funded from other source positions? Because right now it looks like the city is paying for all of these positions when that's not true. I mean, I realize that's not the scope of the document, but I'm just thinking as a person looking at this, not as somebody who's knowledgeable.
I understand the point. The organizational chart is not necessarily for the purpose of outlining where funding is coming from, but rather to communicate, particularly in our case to civil service, what the organization looks like in terms of a snapshot. We can add additional detail to that in terms of text. Sorry, we had a bit of a disturbance in the room here. I can absolutely add notes to the organizational chart if that is information you think is worthwhile to include. But at this point, I think there's only one position, the Housing Justice Director, where that would apply, actually.
Correct. Can you go to the Treasurer's Office, too?
I think it just might be helpful
Treasurer's Office is
information for citizens viewing the chart. I think it looks fantastic. Like, I totally get what you're doing. Pick it up and put it down. Just a suggestion.
Okie doke. Moving. Oh, sorry, Margaret.
So you have two positions on there relating to housing?
Yes.
The housing justice and then
and the fair housing officer.
Fair housing.
How do they relate to each other?
That they don't, actually. they report to the mayor, but that is the extent of their relationship.
They have different functions.
They have different functions.
Michelle is salaried and Teresa's.
Yeah, Teresa, as for housing officer, is an appointee by the mayor to oversee and act as an intermediary in cases of fair housing discrimination.
The next resolution is supporting the installation of Nutritious Choices Learning Path project at the Riverfront Park. Theo.
I'll second.
And Amber. Thank you both. The next resolution is actually. It authorizes the mayor to sign a license agreement with Hudson Paddles, but it's a renewal of the existing agreement. Ryan?
I'll second.
And Amber. The next, as you heard earlier on, is creating a fee for renting the kitchen at the Youth Center building. Ryan and Amber. The next two, but we'll do one at a time, authorize a loan from the general fund to the capital fund for the stormwater separation project.
Introduce.
Theo and Ryan. And lastly, another water-related project, and this authorizes the issuance of serial bonds as described by Heather. Ryan. And Amber. Well, thank you for making that expeditious. Before Margaret leaves, would you like to give a quick?
Oh, yes, sorry. Yes, just one very quick item. So at the CAC meeting, I guess last week, we had a presentation from Michael Hara around solar communities. And so I met with him during the week to get some more information about this. Columbia County is hosting being a solar community. And they've entered into an agreement with two vendors. There is no cost to the city, or it's just an arrangement where they will agree to promote solar use and having people sign up. And so Hudson can also, using the Columbia arrangement, they can become a promoter of solar and become a host city. And Michael is going to come and talk to us about it. There's no risk to us. There's no financial cost to it. The only thing we have to commit to is promoting solar. And we get to define how we would do that. So it's not like you're told you have to have a budget of X dollars to do various promotions. But it sounds really interesting and I think would be great for us here in Hudson. We would get a little bit of a, money from the vendors for every Hudson person that signs up. But one of the really significant things about it is that in doing this, it would actually assist us in getting points, extra points in other grants that we might apply for eco-friendly initiatives. So it did not seem to me to be any negatives associated with this, and it just sounded like a great opportunity. So he's going to come next week, and did he say he's going to draft a resolution?
Yes.
He's going to do the resolution with very limited paperwork involved in getting us set up, and he will be here next week to talk to us.
And this will be at the regular meeting?
Yes. Margaret, before you leave, I just need you to sign the second. This is the only one you...
Okay.
I'm going to come around here. Sorry.
She's doing that. Some comment actually providing a plan for the rooftop solar elements that we talked about, so I'll have those ready for the next CAC meeting, specifically for the bus depot garage.
Thank you.
And we're looking at
Okay, and lastly, I was going to have Crystal talk to us tonight about the open meetings law and documents, but we'll put that off for next till the next week. In the meantime, one last thing is, Ryan, can you tell us about the various decisions or recommendations, I should say, made by the Tourism and Event Committee for dispersing the funds in
round
the budget?
Round one of dispersing the funds. So getting feedback from everybody after the first meeting, the recommended where we've netted out in terms of what we'll produce for next week, and obviously we're going to be able to comment ahead of time, but for the day tours with transportation, the Hudson Business Coalition, $2,500 to have the program do one. Everybody saw that there's value in trying that, and at least try one of them. For Flag Day, funding $5,000. For Juneteenth, $8,300. And that's actually combining what the initial separate ask from Life Forms was. We want to ensure that since the exposition will be at Life Forms, that we support Juneteenth and make sure that as nascent as it is, it gets off the ground more. $5,000 for Out Pride Hudson. We have not made a decision yet on anything with the second Saturdays. Waterfront Wednesday, I need to follow up with Sam and Adam, but we are looking to fund the full request of $10,550 with the stipulation that we are able to get one additional cruise for each Out Hudson Juneteenth, and then we expect to be getting applications from the Latinx Festival as well as potentially the Bengali Festival. That they would offer those cruises as a way for those organizations to do additional fundraising. And finally, $5,000 for Winter Walk. So in total, that would bring us doling out $36,350, leaving us a current reserve of $14,650.
Thank you. So that'll be turned into a resolution promptly and will be on the agenda for next week. Any questions to wrap up here? Any other last minute things you'd like to talk about?
One question, Brian. Did we have a chance to circle back around with any of the organizations mentioned in the Waterfront Wednesday's co-sponsory kind of fundraiser to gauge their interest?
No, not yet. So when we do notify them this week, that's when we'll make sure that they're interested in that ask, because to your point, we don't want to over ask what we should or should not of the Waterfront Wednesdays team, but at least we're putting it on the table that we're trying to find the synergies to make sure that all of the organizations can work better together depending on who's getting the lion's share funding.
Vicky.
Thank you.
Vicky.
Yes, I just want to give my opinion about the chart. I just feel that Hudson is a very small city. We're only close to 6,000. There we have Newport and Newburgh, 25,000, 28,000, and they only have one council member per ward. So we're, I mean, it's great to have a lot of ideas. I do think the city gets benefited by having the campus there. But at the same time, you know, if the population doesn't increase, we may have to reconsider having two council members per ward. That's all.
Well, that's a big haul to take care of that. And it's on the agenda for the near future where we will perhaps reconsider our existing charter and our structure of our city government. But we can't simply just get rid of...
Well, I know. I'm just saying, I want to throw it out.
Yeah. No, I understand. You know. Good night, Margaret. And it requires a referendum. So that's why it has to be a very big and careful, carefully discussed issue. But thank you for mentioning it. Because I happen to agree. We only really need one per ward. But that's not... I don't get to make those decisions on my own. Dominic.
Yes, thank you. Is Michael Humphrey still there by any chance?
Yes, he is.
Oh, great. Hi, Michael. So I just wondered if maybe you could give us an update at the formal meeting, one on
progress of the ADA sidewalk audit and the next step on moving that forward. I know we put out the money for that, and I wonder what the next step is for the sidewalk audit and moving that forward. Secondly, the security for City Hall. I know that in our next couple months, City Hall is going to be under construction, so it might be a good timing to maybe combine any kind of improvement at that time, since City Hall is going to be closed, or any kind of security building improvements during that time.
I will have to punt that to the president, the council president, in terms of setting the agenda for next week, if you would like me to have.
Oh, yes, of course. You're always welcome.
Report on those things.
Yep.
Next Tuesday. I'm happy to do that. Though.
I think you're already off to do that.
Yeah.
As I recall. So there.
Thank you.
Anything else? So you know what I'm waiting for.
I'd like the motion to close.
Ah, that's one of them. Who seconds that?
I'll second.
Ryan seconds. All those in favor of adjourning, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Hello.
My computer died during that run. That was so long, my computer died.
No, I'd say that. Give me what I got to
sign. You got a lot to sign. Okay, Amber.
I was still thinking that I had to come in tomorrow to sign everything.
No, you can do it
you're
tonight.
You're done, man. Oh, no, you got more than you're not done. Margaret's blah, 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 blah. Okay, Amber. Give that to Amber. She's number one.
And is that me as two?
You're no, that's Margaret.
Oh, that's Margaret. You're number one.
You're number one on that, and then Amber. We get to keep Michael company while he closes up.
We'll stack them down like this.
Yeah, put them in order. Now, you're number one and Theo's number two on that one.
Theo?
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to come back tomorrow.
Yeah, you sign it upside down.
Yeah.
Wait, okay. Where? Oh,
yeah. Bridge connectivity.
I'm going to counsel on sick Adam right now.
Are we still broadcasting?
Oh!